This is the Gordon Damer Show on 98.7 ESPN.
We're talking about the Knicks as they get set for Game 4 tomorrow. Our coverage here gets underway at 12:30. Of course, also the Rangers have their Game 4 tomorrow. Try to finish things off and bring out the brooms there. But let's head to the phones. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number. Let's start off with Richard is in Manhattan. Richard, what's going on, my friend?
Gordon, I got to disagree with you right off the bat. Stars don't win. Teams win.
No, but you have to have stars on in the NBA, stars win. Yes. That's the one league where you cannot be a star in the NBA and never win a title.
No, that's not true. Okay, Sabonis and Darren Fox, are they stars?
Well, they might be stars, but they're not superstars. They're not. Okay. I mean, and their
Draymond
careers
Green
have just
Steph
kind of
Curry.
Begun. What's
Draymond
that?
Draymond Green, Steph Curry, Anthony Davis, LeBron James, KD, Booker, Beal, Zion, Westbrook, Kawhi, James Harden, Paul George, Lillard, Giannis, Trae Young. All of those guys, what you would call stars, with the possible exception of Russell Westbrook. He's a little past his prime. All of those guys are stars, and they're all home. They're all going
well,
home.
I mean, yes, you're not going to win every single year, but most of the guys that you have listed there, they have won titles at some point or have just kind of begun their careers.
Some of them are considered the top 50 players, okay?
Right.
KD.
How many guys are in the top 50 of all time that have never won a title?
A lot of guys. You can get a lot of guys.
Really?
Oh, sure. I'm sure there are guys. Maybe five to ten. Anyway, all right.
Out of 50, right. That's what I'm saying.
You like to bet, and you like numbers. And I like numbers. I don't like to bet. I don't.
Okay.
But you have to deduce what you see. And it's something where you have to use your brain. The Knicks won Monday night, correct? They were 5.5-point favorites going into that game. Monday night they beat
Monday
the
night
Sixers.
Was game two, right?
Correct.
Okay.
They beat the Sixers. They were 5.5-point favorites, right?
Mm-hmm.
2 days, 3 days later, they go to Philadelphia. No injuries on the Knicks. Same team. Nobody got sick. Nobody got hurt that we know of, right? And Vegas places Philly as a 5.5-point favorite. That's an 11-point swing.
Okay.
Now you understand that some swing because you're switching courts, home
right,
to
you go on home court, right? And also there's more of a desperation factor for Philly.
My point is not to question. I am not as smart as Vegas, but I can figure out what they're saying. They're saying, "You guys, we want you to take the Knicks. We're giving you 5.5. So you got to figure." Everybody would be taking the Knicks because they're getting 5.5 where they were giving 5.5 3 days ago.
No, what they're trying to do, Richard, and thanks for the phone call, is they're trying to balance out what the amount of action generally. I mean, I don't know what specific book you're talking about. Maybe they do have a lean one way or the other, but generally they want to have an equal amount of action so the betting public is if you didn't have a line, the betting public would be overwhelmingly on Philadelphia, so you have to kind of put some line together, and I'm sure they have an algorithm that allows them to know what the line is going to kind of start at, and there's a little movement here or there, but generally they want to have about equal action on either side, and they don't want to, they're not about getting it knowing who's going to win, they just want to have an equal amount of money on both teams, this way whoever wins, they don't get drenched. Spike is in St. Pete. Spike, what's going on?
I love Richard. I've been on the radio since Richard, since 1973. He was 16 years old calling John Sterling. I was 10 years older than him. His deduction's fairly accurate. Ewing and Barkley is probably about 15 guys. And of the guys he mentioned, half of them have never won a championship. But I agree with Richard to some point. Listen, here's where I stand. I know it's a short show. On the station and the callers like myself and Lee from Manhattan and Trey and Richard and Larry and Alan Hahn and Ty Butler, we're all basketball centric. That's our first sport. I'm sure you'd agree because you know us all.
Yep.
Where you're football and so on and so forth. That game, that game last night, I said before the game, that's the game they're going to lose. If they're going to lose the game, I'm okay with it as long as they get Brunson out of that funk. That's all I wanted to see. As far as the officiating, we know if it was Mitchell Robinson who did that, he'd be tossed out of the game. You know, sometimes you have to use common sense. You really do. In spite of it, Embiid, with Bell's palsy, some excuse for the bell, but
a very weird excuse.
You know,
makes you all of a sudden reach out and grab people's legs. I didn't realize that was a side effect of Bell's palsy, but
yeah. How many times did you let Jack tell you the dog ate the homework? Once, you know. But I'm sorry about the issue with your dog. It broke my heart. I went through that, but it's a short show. I'm almost finished. I just want to tell you, we're on the same exact page. If they were going to lose a game, and the impetus, Josh Hart said it best in his interview. They knew the deck was stacked. Zach Sarver will not get, and I know him personally, he's from Brooklyn. Zach Sarver will not get another game. They all agreed with it. I mean, and the guys in Secaucus, all I said late night, my only question was, let's see after it was a flagrant one, how much in-game money bet on the Sixers, if you want to have a conspiracy theory. But that was the game to lose. He was brilliant. He's dirty. He's got twice as many flagrant fouls than Draymond Green. The Knicks should win tomorrow. They're the better team 3-8. Do you agree?
Yeah, but and Spike, thanks for the call. I mean, being the best team 3-8 is not necessarily what's going to decide it, especially if they allow Embiid to do what he did in game three. They have to, and I don't think he's going to shoot as well as he did that game. I think clearly they'll have to kind of go back to the drawing board, and part of it will be decided by, is Mitchell Robinson going to be available? Do they have to go to some backup plan? Is Precious Achiuwa going to be more minutes? Even if Mitchell Robinson is available, how many minutes is he available? So there's a lot of things to kind of decide. But again, yeah, if the Sixers were going to win a game, that's the game they're going to get. Now, that game's over, and you have to learn from that game and then make the adjustments from that. The issues that I would have as a Knicks fan, and the issues I do have as a Knicks fan, is that two things. Going into the series, I felt good because I felt like Embiid was not at 100%. But as the series has gone along, it seems like he's getting stronger, right? Like, if you watch a video from game one, it seemed like he was laboring a lot more in game one, clearly, than he was in game three. That cannot continue. The Knicks can't allow that to continue. They have to figure out a way to, and I'm not talking about the injury per se, but they have to figure out a way to limit him in some way. And I'll be honest with you, I've been a little disappointed with OG Anunoby and his impact on the defensive side, because it feels like the Sixers, they got two big weapons in Maxey and Embiid, and those two guys have kind of done what they've wanted to do. Now, it's fortunate the Knicks were able to steal game two. Otherwise, you'd feel completely different about the series. But kind of taking out the fact the Knicks lead the series, just the way things are trending in terms of the big star players, you can't feel great about where the Knicks are at. Embiid has looked like Embiid. Maxey has done a real good job. I know his overall numbers in game three might not look so great in terms of the shooting percentage, but still had 25 points. Still felt like he got to the basket at any point he wanted to. It's nice that Brunson's line looked better in game three, but I don't think that he had nearly the impact of what his line looked like. And he has not looked great in the series overall. Hopefully he's now coming out of it. But who else is going to step up for the Knicks like the way the two stars on Philadelphia have played? That kind of remains to be seen. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number, 1-800-919-3776. So coming up, we'll get to some more Knicks phone calls. We will get into some NFL draft stuff as well, with the draft rolling on. But I should tell you, easily the most anticipated sporting event of the year, the Pickleball Showdown between Team DiPietro and Rothenberg and Team Anita Marks and Amani Toomer. It's Sunday, May 5th at Pickleball America in Stamford, Connecticut. Pregame coverage kicks off on ESPN New York at 9 a.m. with a live broadcast hosted by Anita Marks as she sets the stage. Then shortly after the show, the paddles come out for the Pickleball Showdown for the Ages. Be there May 5th to witness this showcase event at Pickleball America in Stamford, Connecticut. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number. It is the Gordon Damer Show. It is 98.7 FM, ESPN New York.
This is the Gordon Damer Show. on 98.7 ESPN.
The NFL draft wrapped up. The Jets with the final pick, pick 257. And Jalen Key, defensive back from Alabama, he goes to the Jets. So he is Mr. Irrelevant for 2024. And there you go. The draft is now in the books. And we've been talking a lot about the Knicks here in the open as we take you up until 8 o'clock. But I do want to kind of shift to the draft, and especially the first round. I'm a big football fan. I love the draft. I love watching it. But the main thing that everybody has to keep in mind, and you forget about it every single year, is nobody knows. The teams don't know. We don't know. The players don't even know who's going to turn out to be the right pick, the wrong pick, and all that type of stuff. But I love watching the first round. I love watching even teams that aren't mine or don't have associations with, and just kind of see how things broke down. The thing with the Falcons and taking Michael Penix Jr. or the Vikings, do they trade up? All the intrigue of it, I love it. And I think if you're a football fan, you love the draft, especially if you're a fan of a bad team. And luckily here in New York, we have two of those. So there had to be a lot of interest in the draft this year, especially in the first round with the Jets and the Giants. The Giants getting Malik Nabers and the Jets selecting Olu Fashanu from Penn State. And a little bit of controversy for both picks, right? The Jets controversy was all the talk was about Brock Bowers or maybe selecting a wide receiver if Odunze had still been there, adding another skill position player for Aaron Rodgers. I said this leading up to the draft, and I actually gave you how it was going to break down the night before the draft. I said the Jets are going to trade back, and they're going to select an offensive lineman, and I gave you Fashanu's name as well. I probably butchered it then as well, but I said the offensive tackle from Penn State, Fashanu. So I know that people love the shiny object. They would have loved another, you know, flashy receiver for the Jets or Brock Bowers, who might turn out to be an absolute stud. The Jets absolutely needed to get another offensive lineman. You don't judge the draft. I will grant you, you don't judge the draft by position. You judge it by the talent of the player, right? You should almost always be going best player available. But the odds of the Jets, the New York Jets, and their history of the offensive line with Joe Douglas running the show, the history of their offensive line with Mike Maccagnan running the show, tells you the odds of Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses lasting the entire season without ever missing a game, missing any time, it's about the same as Zach Wilson winning the MVP with the Denver Broncos. It might not be that high, but it's very, very high. And in the best case scenario is that you don't see Fashanu this year, right? Because that will tell you that Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses have both been healthy, and you talk about beating the odds with the Jets and their history of an offensive line. Now, you watch the profiles of Fashanu and everybody's raving about him. It's amazing. Everybody in the first round. Oh, everybody had a great pick. The only things that you could even quibble with was the fact that the Falcons, it's not that Michael Penix is not going to be a good quarterback. That wasn't the criticism of that pick. It was they already have a quarterback. Why take another quarterback? Every single team in the first round. I wish the people who graded or do grade draft coverage, I wish that they would have been my professors at school. Nobody gets a bad grade. Like, the worst you'll do is like, they got a C-. They got a D+. What's the difference between a D+ in a draft grade and a C- in a draft grade? Seems kind of arbitrary. Seems kind of random. I would say the only negative thing that you could say about the Jets' first round pick is that he's an offensive lineman and he was drafted by Joe Douglas. Because in Joe Douglas's time running the New York Jets, that has been the kiss of death. If he drafts you, if he trades for you, if he signs you, I mean, this kid is getting rave reviews. Everybody in the first round is getting rave reviews. If you have Google, you can go back and look. Mekhi Becton, he got rave reviews. Didn't work out. Or when they signed Lakin Tomlinson, that move, I thought it was a great move too. rave reviews. When they moved up to get AVT, rave reviews. Guy can't stay healthy. So for one reason, or who was the guy? Ryan Khalil. They brought him out. The offensive line is going to be such a strain. We are on like the fifth revision of the offensive line under Joe Douglas. And there has not been anything that has been more bankable that whoever the Jets get along their offensive line since Joe Douglas took over, something's going to go wrong. Something is going to go wrong. No team has tried more to improve the offensive line with no results. And I know that with the draft and being excited about the draft, it's amazing to me, even moving beyond the offensive line, how much faith Jet fans still have in Joe Douglas and the draft. Because when it comes to Joe, here's one thing, Jet fans, you have to kind of come to terms with. Joe Douglas is a one-hit wonder. He had one excellent draft, fantastic. I mean, he had three picks in the top 36. I would like to think that you would do a pretty good job on that one. But Joe Douglas is he is Chumbawamba, man. He is Dexy's Midnight Runners. He is a one-hit wonder. He had one excellent draft, and the rest have been mediocre to bad. So I hope for Jet fans' sake that Olu Fashanu is going to turn out to be an all-pro, and you're going to have your left tackle for the next 10 years. And if it's Joe Douglas running the show beyond this year, if it's somebody else, at least when we get to this time next year, and hopefully the Jets aren't picking in the top 10 again, at least when they talk about the needs of the team, left tackle won't be on that list. But given Joe Douglas's history running the team and certainly in the draft outside of the year, he had four picks in the top 36. Chances are, all the talk of this guy's great and that guy's, chances are, that won't be the case. All right, so that was my takeaway on the Jets. My takeaway on the Giants is, sometimes the best deal is the one you don't make. And I don't know how hard they actually pushed. I know there was a lot of reports day of the draft on Thursday that the Giants were trying to move up and draft Drake May. And there had been a lot of talk leading up to that about interest in J.J. McCarthy. I think what's clear is the Giants did the right thing. Now, I'm not going to tell you I know what Malik Nabers is going to turn out to be. I would think at this point, though, drafting a wide receiver from LA, like there was a joke back in the day that if your team, you could tune into the draft in the fifth round, and if you saw that your team drafted somebody from the University of Miami, you'd be, oh, great pick. Great job. What a job to taking that guy there. You don't even know because they were just so loaded with talent. That's kind of the same thing taking, it feels like, a wide receiver out of LSU. So hopefully Malik Nabers is going to be that explosive weapon. And if nothing else, at least a Giant offense now has a true number one receiver, and maybe that will kind of help push things in the right direction, at least from the skill positions, because they went into this draft basically needing everything. I know they took a running back. I know they took a tight end. Hopefully, again, speaking about offensive line, hopefully their offensive line is now finally fixed. But in terms of the quarterback conversation, there was no way in my mind that the Giants had the ability really to trade up for a quarterback. They bringing in a quarterback to this, there's no quarterback alive, I think, who could excel in this offense if you're using that pick, right, the sixth pick, and trading that away, and trading away other picks to move up simply for a quarterback, because then you're not going to be able to fill those other holes as well, and they already have some other holes. This is not a one-year turnaround in terms of refixing the Giant offense. This is a couple of year rebuild type of situation. And for anyone who says, well, if you because this is a popular narrative, trading up, if you get the quarterback right, it doesn't matter what price you pay. No, that's not right, because it's not a thing that's set in stone where, oh, we just have to get this guy and he'll fix all the other problems. Like people pointing out, well, the Giants traded up to get Eli Manning and it worked out. Yes, look at the offense that Eli Manning walked into on day one. He had Tiki Barber, he had Imani Toomer, he had Shockey at tight end. He had an offensive line that had Chris Snee and O'Hara and David Deal. And the following season, they added Plexiball. That's a team. That's the team that trades up. That's the team that can mortgage the future a little bit because they have some actual pieces in place, never mind the fact they also had the defense that they had. So I think the Giants would have been making a massive mistake trading away future assets to get a quarterback. And it seemed like the only one they were talking about was really Drake May. I think May goes into probably the worst situation that you can go into in terms of overall talent. The Patriots, it seemed like they were pretty barren, and that is a complete rebuild situation. But in terms of the offense, I think the Giants' defense might be better. But in terms of the offense, there's not a lot in the cupboard there either. Now, hopefully they nailed some of these picks, and hopefully Malik Nabers will be part of that. And I think next year the talk will then be about the quarterback, because I don't think Daniel Jones will ever stay healthy enough or ever be good enough to really be the guy that takes you to that level. But I don't think that you have to kind of pick your spots as well. And this was not the spot for the Giants to go out there and trade up and trade away a bunch of future assets to be landing a quarterback. Plus, given how badly Joe Shane has evaluated the current quarterback he has, I'm not so sure I trust him to reach for a quarterback. Now, maybe one will fall in his lap next year. And if he did a good job this year of putting some pieces in place where you say, okay, now you've got some real pieces on offense. Now you've got at least a functional offensive line that is not just a sieve and not just an issue game in and game out. And Nabers shows you that he's a piece, and the tight end from Penn State shows you he's a piece, and the running game looks functional. Okay, fine. Then we can add a quarterback and at least give the guy a fighting chance of succeeding. But bringing any quarterback in to this offense, taking away Nabers and taking away some of the other picks that you made in this draft, I don't think that there's a quarterback in this draft or really in any draft that was going to be set up for success. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number. Coming up, we'll get to what I learned on TikTok. We'll get some draft thoughts as well. We still have lots to do as we take you up until 8 o'clock. It's the Gordon Damer Show. It's 98.7 FM, ESPN New York.
This is the Gordon Damer Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Kirk Cousins is 35, and he's coming off a major injury. Now, I know they gave him a ton of money, and I would think that he's going to come back from that injury and be okay, but what if he's not? what if he's not going to be okay? And I heard all week about the Giants. Well, it doesn't matter what you trade up, trade to move up, as long as you get the pick right. The Falcons didn't trade anything. And if Michael Penix, if Penix stinks, well then yes, absolutely they made the wrong move. But they didn't trade anything to get him. And I would think having the eighth pick in the draft, having brought in Kirk Cousins and hoping that he is now going to take you from a bad team, because that seems like the one thing that's really been missing on their offense as a quarterback, you're going to be a pretty good team. You should be a playoff team. And given that division that you play in, you might be winning 10, 11 games a year. You're not going to be picking eighth in the draft again, hopefully, anytime soon. So I don't think that it's necessarily a bad move at all. And they say, and we kind of all agree, the best time to draft a quarterback is when you're not desperate for a quarterback and the guy doesn't have to come in and be the savior and you're desperate for the guy to succeed all the way. Right? That's all I've heard about the Jets with Zach Wilson. Oh, they had to give him more time. Oh, they don't give these guys time. You have to do what the Chiefs did or what the Packers did with Rodgers. Well, that's kind of what the Falcons are doing here. Now, again, I don't know. I think that there's a halfway decent shot that Michael Penix is going to be a good pro. Maybe he won't be. He has had a lot of injury things. He does have some things to work on, like any player coming into the league. First round pick, third round pick, whatever. But there's no question in my mind of the guys who got drafted in the first round, no quarterback went to a better situation than Michael Penix Jr., where he gets to sit for a year or two, maybe a little bit more. But if he's sitting for a year or two, well, I would think that means that the Falcons are a pretty good team and they're not going to force him in there. That's a better situation than a lot. I'll tell you, that's a lot of better situation than Drake May got. It's probably a better situation than Caleb Williams. It's the kid that went to Washington's going to. Daniels. So I think it's a I cringe watching all these videos, and they're very funny of fans overreacting, but they're those videos every single year. And if you go and want to find them, you can find them of when the Bills took Josh Allen or when the Chiefs took Patrick Mahomes or all these people. Oh, well, it's not always about just the player or just the situation. It's everything. And I think that there's at least if Michael Penix Jr. does not succeed with the Falcons, it won't be because it was outside of his control. At least he's got some good stuff going there, and he'll be able to kind of take it in for a year or two or maybe longer. And when he does get that chance, it won't be being rushed or being thrown into the fire too quickly. All right, let's go back to the phones. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number. Oh, our buddy Omar is in Brooklyn. Omar, my friend, what's going on?
How are you? Good evening. How are you?
I'm very good. How confident are you feeling about the Knicks tomorrow, huh?
You know what I'm feeling?
Uh-huh.
I wanted to call you at 12 o'clock to 3, and I wake up after working last night.
Yeah.
So I wake up around 3 o'clock, and there was the Islanders game. I didn't know you were on at this time, right? So I said, I have to call Gordon Damer, and that will be a lucky charm for the Knicks fans, right? So finally, I got a call. When I hear in the rain, turn on the car and you were on, I called right away. I said, then I got to call before 8 o'clock so I can talk to Gordon Damer and the Knicks fan. But tomorrow, that is a sign that I finally talked to you. Knicks are going to win tomorrow, man.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Now I'm starting to feel a little worried about this series. Why are you so confident? Didn't you see game 3? Embiid is eating us alive. They're doing anything they want. The officials are against us.
Today I am going to make my rant, and if all the Knicks fans agree, you have to tell me later when I finish. I said, I was telling for 4 or 5 years to my son, he was a big Embiid fan, and I said, this guy's energy prone and he's a punk. And finally, the world has seen, and the New York Knicks fans have seen, how much punk this is. At all times, I said, 06 picks, and this, for me, he's an injury-prone player. He's a punk, even after this season, whatever happens. But tomorrow, for the Knicks fans and for Knicks guys, something has to be done to Embiid. And not in the third quarter and not in the fourth quarter. It has to be done in the first quarter to put everything right, because he wanted to bully the Knicks on game 3 and the referees were in it. So we have to show that intent in the first quarter. I don't know what he has to do. Do it on a basketball court. But then I said, okay, Thibodeau is a basketball coach. He's not a punk. Play the game, do it the right way, and physically out-physical them and bully them and throw them under the gutter in Philadelphia and go win the game, man.
Well, there you go. Now you hit it. There you go, Omar. All right, thanks for the phone call, Omar. Yeah, that's the thing. Go win the game. Don't get caught up in all the it's like a video game. Don't get caught up on the side quests. Focus on the main task. Focus on what you're actually there to do, and that is to win the game. Don't be like the Knicks teams of the past. Sometimes they get sidetracked about, we're not going to be pushed around. We're not going to be bullied. We're going to show you. By winning the game, living well is the best revenge. So go out there, get a good game from Brunson again. Let's see the offense flow. Let's see them kind of settle down. Oh, it kind of feels like the offense is not, it feels very tight. It feels very, they just need to relax and play their game. And it doesn't feel like, even though through three games and even though they have the 2-1 lead, it doesn't feel like they've really kind of played their game yet. Josh Hart, I think, has, but I don't feel like that from Anunoby as of yet. Clearly, Brunson had the 39 last time out, but still want to see that kind of carry over. You got to get more out of DiVincenzo. You got to get more out of Bogdanovich. You got to get more out of some of these guys who kind of let you down in game 3. That one game, that's a pass. Okay, fine. Sixers were going to win a game at least. Go out there tomorrow. Set the tone early on. Don't get into the physical stuff. You know the officials are going to be looking at it. Any little and Embiid would love nothing more than a little ticky-tack thing. He's going to the line 1,000 times like he did in game 3. Go out there. Handle your business. Play hard defense. No, I'm not saying be soft. That's not the mission. Go do your thing on the defensive side. Give Embiid a tough time, but don't go out there intentionally looking to settle the score. Settling the score, the only score that matters is on the scoreboard and winning the game. Come home up 3-1, that's the best revenge, not getting involved in other stuff. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number, 1-800-919-3776. What I Learned on TikTok is next on the Gordon Damer Show. It's 98.7 FM, ESPN New York.
This is the Gordon Damer Show on 98.7 ESPN. It's impossible.
I'm just getting warmed up.
Full of hijinks.
And look, I'm not your friend, so I'm not your friend. I'm your enemy.
And educational.
You sound like you're a moron.
It's What I Learned on TikTok, starring Gordon Damer.
Oh, yes, people, it is that time. I, as a 53-year-old man, spend way too much time on that TikTok app, but it's because I learn interesting, but yet useless. Completely, it's a complete waste of time, but I've taken that useless information, crafted a little segment, give some airtime to the people working on the show, Chantel and Julian today. And they have to kind of decipher what's real, what's not. It's What I Learned on TikTok. Or how it works, I give them four pieces of information, three of which just made up, not true at all. But one thing is true, it will sound ridiculous, but it's something that's true, and it is something that I have learned on TikTok. Okay, so Chantel, Julian, who is batting leadoff today?
That will be me today.
Okay. Before we do that, Chantel, have you... Oh, no, it doesn't really matter. Okay, no, we're good. All right, Julian, you're first up. I thought I had one that I had to check to see if she had seen a certain show, but I don't have to do that here. All right, here we go. Are you ready to roll?
I am.
All right, here we go. Number one, the new Durango Hotel in Las Vegas has no check-in desk. Instead, guests receive their room keys from several, like, slot machine-looking displays in the lobby. You put in your information, and then you hit the slot machine, and your key comes out. Number two, Johnny Depp's hatred of the paparazzi led him to wear the same outfit in public for almost 18 months because by doing so, the photos would be less valuable because they would always seem like they were the same day. Number three, there's a Thomas Edison statue in Silicon Valley that radiates free Wi-Fi. Or number four, the royal beekeeper in England, as part of her duties, had to inform the bees of the queen's death. So to recap, as Julian kind of figures out which way he wants to go, Durango Hotel in Las Vegas has no check-in desk, but instead several slot machines where you get your key to your room. Number two, Johnny Depp's hatred of the paparazzi led him to wear the same outfit in public for almost a year and a half because by doing so, it made their pictures less valuable. Number three, there's a statue of Thomas Edison in Silicon Valley that radiates free Wi-Fi. Or number four, the royal beekeeper of England, as part of her duties, had to inform the bees of the queen's death.
So to start, I'm going to millionaire this and 50-50 get rid of two and three.
Okay, all right.
Sort of decided between one and four, obviously, but I'm leaning more towards four.
Okay.
I've heard that one before.
Okay, you're gonna lock that one in.
I'm gonna lock
it in. Yes, that is absolutely true. Imagine being a person who's like a beekeeper for like the royal beekeeper, and now you gotta go tell the bees, hey, by the way, bees, the queen died. I mean, what are we doing as a society in 2024? I realize that they probably have done that for hundreds of years, but still, it seems the bees had no comment on the death of the queen. All right, Chantel, you're in the driver's seat now. You ready to roll?
I'm ready to roll.
All right, here we go. Number one, the Three Stooges, while world famous, only performed as a trio for a little over 2 years. Number two, George Lucas of Star Wars fame owns his own fire department. Number three, Stephen Hawking shares a birth date with both Galileo and Einstein. Or number four, Gandhi had a severe hatred of grasshoppers. So again, to recap, Three Stooges, while world famous, all these movies, they only performed as a trio for a little over 2 years. Number two, George Lucas owns his own fire department. Stephen Hawking shares a birth date with Galileo and Einstein. Or number four, Gandhi man of love and peace, hated severe hatred of grasshoppers.
Oh, man. You know, I really was preparing for what I learned on TikTok, mentally preparing I was coming here. And I was like, today I'm going to win. Like, I'm feeling like Embiid.
Well, you don't know. Julian did a very good job. He's like my nemesis in this game. He knocks him out of the park regularly.
I know. And now I'm looking and I'm like, I'm going to get pressure's this on. Wrong.
Yeah.
Okay, so I really would love to go with the Three Stooges just because, like, entertainment was so different back then.
Absolutely.
So 2 years was like a lifetime for a trio to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Gandhi being afraid of grasshoppers, I don't know. I like that one. That sounds a little true.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Gandhi hating grasshoppers.
All right.
And I'm
locking
it in. Yep.
Yeah. No, I just made that one up. I just thought of who loves everything and then just come up with something that would be weird to hate. But no, he did not. So far as I know, there's no evidence that Gandhi had any feelings one way or the other on grasshoppers.
Oh, man. And grasshoppers are not weird to hate. They just hop. All right.
There you go.
So,
So you're down to the Three Stooges, George Lucas or Stephen Hawking?
Yeah. So I don't know who George Lucas is.
He's a movie director, famous movie director, did the Star Wars movies, came up with the idea, all that type of stuff.
Okay. I've never seen a Star Wars movie in my life.
Okay. Well, I knew I should have asked that. That was why I was going to ask before, but I decided against it.
I've never. You know what? I'm going to go with the Three Stooges.
Okay.
That's the one I'm locking in. Yeah.
All right. No, Stooges worked together for years and years and years.
What? Years and years and years?
Oh, yeah. Years and years and years. They were in vaudeville together. No, they were together for a very, very long time. They got ripped off for a bunch of years. Yeah. But. All right, so now you're down to George Lucas, who you don't know, and Stephen Hawking sharing a birth date with Galileo and Einstein.
And Stephen Hawking I do know. I just don't know his birthday.
Right. Well, that would be a little weird to know that off the top of your head.
All right, so I'm going to go with George Lucas has a fire truck.
No, he has a fire department.
He has a fire department, and I'm going to go with him because you said he's a director.
Yes.
People like him, they always set up big money plays, long-time money plays. So that's the one. I'm locking it in.
All right, lock it in. Yes, that is correct. Yeah, because of all the film is very flammable. So he's got a lot of valuable film reservoirs and all that type of stuff at his house. So he's rich enough that he can afford his own fire department. So good for him. And he actually has sold some fire trucks to local towns nearby him. He's doing so well.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, good guy. All right. Is that the 2-minute warning of the show? Okay. All right, so last one. This time we flip it. It goes from trying to find the true thing to finding the lie. Three truths, one lie. Here we go. Thomas Edison was scared of the dark. Number two, to keep Genghis Khan's burial location a secret, the 2,000 people who attended were killed. Number three, the composer of the Game of Thrones theme basically wrote it in 30 minutes after seeing the opening credits. Or number four, a lost Boy Scout went missing in Yellowstone but was rescued after getting a pilot's attention by using his belt buckle as a signal. That pilot, Harrison Ford.
Okay, we were deliberating.
Okay.
All right, so the Boy Scout getting help from
Harrison Ford?
Harrison Ford, that's the lie.
You think that's the lie? Okay.
Yeah.
Julian, you both going the same one?
I'm going to go a different route.
Okay.
I'm going to go number one.
Number one, Thomas Edison was scared of the dark. Those are both true. Those are both true. So now you're down to Genghis Khan killing 2,000 people at his funeral, or the Game of Thrones theme was written in 30 minutes.
So I'm going to go Genghis Khan because what a narcissist.
Yeah.
If you killed
him. He did. I don't know if you're aware of his work, but he was, not the worst thing ever said about him being a narcissist.
Oh, man. All right, good.
Are you sticking with Chantel, Julian, or are you going your own way?
I'm
going
to go my own way.
All right, so you'll go with the Game of Thrones theme written in 30 minutes. Well, obviously one of you is right, and it is Julian. No, it actually took the guy 3 days to write it, which is actually kind of fast for it. But no, yeah, Genghis Khan's burial location was to keep it a secret. They killed the 2,000 people who attended the funeral, and then the soldiers who killed the 2,000 people, they were also killed. That Genghis Khan guy, he had some real deep-seated issues.
What a guy.
Yeah, so there you go, people. That is what I learned this week on TikTok. And now, because of this segment, you have learned it too. I was going to say, I usually do the 1-800-919-ESPN, but no, we're almost out of time. So I will say thank you to Julian and Chantel for taking part in this week's What I Learned on TikTok. I will be back Monday night, Larry Hardesty and I, on ESPN New York tonight. We will have a full show. So we'll be on right after Dan Grosse starting at 9 o'clock. And boy, oh boy, well, we have a lot to discuss because we'll be coming off tomorrow's Game 4. So the Knicks will either be back in the driver's seat and you'll be feeling good about things up 3-1, or it will be a whole new world, people. If this series is 2-2, it feels like Knicks fans, they're manic, right? Like one moment, they're feeling great. We want Boston. If this gets to 2-2, the blame game is going to be played on Monday. So we will see you then. Thanks to Julian. Thanks to Chantel. And we will see you Monday night following Dan Grosse. Only here on 98.7 FM, ESPN New York.